The life and times of a remarkable misfit has been very well received. It's been downloaded a remarkable number of times directly from the website of the man who wrote it. Now, it isn't in the Kindle store, it isn't in other places. You have to go to his website to get it. But the life and times of a remarkable misfit has been downloaded so often that I feel as if my greatest expectations have been supported, because when I read the pieces from it before they went on to the website, I said to myself, this is a manifesto for our times. There've been a number of those in the past, and I suppose the biggest one I can think of in recent memory is the Cloutrain Manifesto, and the Cloutrain Manifesto is the most stupendous piece of writing about the kind of world that we live in today. It's barely known. I know very few people who have read it in Ireland, although that doesn't mean that it isn't very well known in other places. And the same with The Life and Times of a Remarkable Misfit. It's been downloaded, but most people I know haven't read it. And I think the next 1,080 days, which is the next period in the life of the author of The Life and Times of a Remarkable Misfit, these 1,080 days, will be characterized by more and more people becoming familiar with that remarkable piece of writing. And the other thing is that that piece of writing is clearly, or this is how I see it, volume one. We have yet to see volume two, volume three, volume four. And I suspect that the thing that's going to make The Life and Times of a Remarkable Misfit different is that, unlike some people who, when you've read their first book, you've read their best book, I think the best is yet to come. I think that there's going to be a gradual maturing as an artist, and that's going to be reflected in the writing. I suspect that the youthful energy of Volume 1 of Life and Times of a Remarkable Misfit is going to be sustained. I think it's going to be sustained all the way through his life. But I think it's going to be informed by the conversations that the author has on the 1,080-day journey. Now, the good thing about it is, and the thing that I find a great relief, is that the 1,080-day journey is not always on the move physically. I mean, nothing would give me more seasickness than the thought that the man I'm communicating with or reading or thinking about or remembering, you know, has moved on from A to B to a new place, and that there are going to be 1,080 individual sleeping places, if you like, on the way. No, a journey can be done, as many of the great philosophers have shown us, great thinkers and great people, by sitting in a single place and meditating. That's entirely possible to do that. So there is no need for physical movement in order to go on a journey. Journeys can be external, in the sense that they go from A to B on a, you know, and you can follow them on, I don't know, there are tools like socialhiking.com. You could actually, AJ Lane could, if he wanted to, put his journey on that website, and that would be a way in which some people who wouldn't already know about him, who are already following, we'll say, Pilgrim Chris, who's setting out on the Camino today from the borders of France and Spain, and who during the next 30 days is going to be moving. No, they're going to be there. There is the ways of recording the external journey. There is no such piece of software that I know for recording the internal spiritual journey. If you like, you may whatever you call it, the internal journey, the internal realization of who you are, and what type, what specific type of creativity you have in your golf bag. I had drawn to my attention during this recent week a very engaging presentation. Excuse me a second. We're not in Lourdes, actually. This is Buttevant. This is Buttevant. We're not going to Lourdes. The man who's going to Lourdes is, well, today he went there, is Pilgrim Chris, and I was there with Grandma recently.
Yeah, but Dad, then where are we going to see Grandma?
In Adair. We're going to Adair. And if I turn left, I go to Liscarroll.
In Adair, yes?
No, we're in Buttevant. Buttevant. It's a place that has little trees growing on the main street. It's just a little village in Ireland. So, yeah, I was saying, going back to what happened during the week. During the week, it was drawn to my attention, says he in a very loose way, that an engaging Scotsman, McColgan, had launched a conversation, if you like, about... influenced by A.J. Leon and influenced by something I'd said too. But this whole idea about your own creativity, what is it? And in the course of it, he, in his own audiobooks about it, he mentioned doing a number of things, including wiring a place up, you know. And, you know, a lot of people wouldn't think that putting wires in a place is very creative. A lot of people think the only thing that is creative is doing something that has the label creative on it. But I think that just as there are several different types of intelligences, I find that model helpful, that the think that we are all intelligent in our own way, and that we have different arrangements of intelligence, and we can develop new arrangements of intelligence as we go through life. But McColgan was really talking about, you know, doing things that you do with your hands and eyes. And then there was a lovely moment where I think it dawned on him that actually the conversations that were going to take place or were already taking place on this, you know, network of wires, you know, we're putting down a foundation for creativity. So I've come a long way away from the issue that I started with in this audiobook, and the thinking about journeys. And in fact, I've lost myself on this journey. But I just, the life and times of a remarkable misfit is where it's at. And it's actually, that's the central point. You know. What about the life and times of a remarkable carpenter? Or the life and times of a remarkable cake maker, life and times of a remarkable poet, life and times of a remarkable builder, bricklayer, hod carrier, you know, teacher, yeah, you know, undertaker. There is a man called Michael Lynch, no, Thomas Lynch, who is worthy of a book called The Life and Times of a Remarkable Undertaker Poet. If you Google him, you'll find out what I mean. So there we are. The Life and Times of a Remarkable Misfit offers us all the possibility of writing our own version of The Life and Times of a Remarkable Person. And writing it, drawing it, audioing it. The thing I think about creativity, and just to touch on this topic for one bare second for a flash, is that I think there is something, that something becomes creative when it's shared. And I'm not sure I've thought through the implications of that, but I don't think creativity exists in a vacuum. And it may be a physical sharing, But I certainly think, for example, that the poems which Emily Dickinson wrote and packaged and put in her loft during her lifetime, which she never showed to anybody else, were a creative act, because she reached out imaginatively to an audience. She reached out imaginatively to an audience when she was writing. She wasn't talking to herself. It's a communal activity, because Emily Dickinson imaginatively communicated, but she did so during a period of the life and times of the middle of the 19th century in the United States of America. So A.J. Leon, with his Life and Times of a Remarkable Misfit, will become more and more known. The community will expand. And there will be linkages made between, for example, the community of interest in the pilgrimage of Pilgrim Chris as he does his Camino, with the 1,080-day, you know, example that A.J. Leon is giving, and that he has sort of produced volume one of in his Life and Times of a Remarkable Misfit. Thank you very much for listening to this. Thank you very much for your interest and your creativity. And I'm ever so curious to know what's going to be in your book, The Life and Times of a Remarkable Me. Bye.